Now in their second season, Leadership of the Leaf, with more cigar knowledge and more leadership insights. Two great leaders smoking great cigars. Here's our host, Austin and Dice. Grab a drink and jump in with a cut and a light.
And welcome to another episode of Leadership of the Leaf. My name is Austin.
My name is Dice. Why are you doing that? What are you
doing? Doing what?
I don't know. He was like all sophisticated and correct sounding and shit.
I wanted to sound correct. Well, what are you smoking?
Sir, it is very close to a very wonderful holiday for us. So I'm smoking a Davidoff, Winston Churchill, The Late Hour.
Oh, funny. Me too.
Is it? So that's how you do your intro when you smoke that?
Of course, you gotta sound sophisticated.
Oh, pinky up.
Pinky up when you're smoking a Davidoff, right? Band out, pinky up.
I want everyone to see. No, that's good. That's a good cigar.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I think we got two different sizes, right?
Yeah, mine is more of a Churchill size.
And I have the Robusto size.
So that'd be interesting for some flavor profiles.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Davidoff, huh?
Yeah, weird.
Do you say Davidoff or Davidoff?
I say Davidoff.
You say Davidoff? Okay, I say them both.
I say, what are you drinking with your Davidoff?
Well, sir, it is a Davidoff.
All right, it's Hennessy. Already know it's Hennessy. What Hennessy are you drinking?
What I'm drinking, sir, is James Hennessy. James Hennessy is a special bought Hennessy that I got when I went on a business trip, and I seen a bottle of it, and I was like, I gotta have that. It cost me $300, but well worth it. Well worth it.
$300 for a bottle of Hennessy?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I mean, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess people have spent their money on sillier things.
Yeah, I would say so, but you know, yeah, James Hennessy. I can't. I mean, the shades of amber, the notes of almond on my nose, the apricot, nutty, vanilla, very light notes of the James Hennessy. I can go on. I can go on.
You're gonna continue saying apricot?
Apricot
instead of apricot?
I say apricot. You say apricot?
Do you say pecan?
I say pecan. No, I say pecan. Pecan pie. What are you drinking, sir? No, enough about my James Hennessy, because James Hennessy is not everyone is going to have their hands on a James Hennessy. Right now, people are probably Googling James Hennessy right now, trying to figure out what the fuck I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be a picture of it on the Instagrams.
At Leadership of the Leaf. So
all
one word. I found a new Scotch whiskey this week, and you know, we always tell people you gotta branch out, try new things.
I am
okay. Still okay. Hennessy, still Hennessy.
Okay.
So mine is a Bothan of the Lowlands. It's a Lowland single malt Scotch whiskey. So it's good. It's interesting. Probably not my favorite one of so far. It's it's a little bit peaty. Almost reminds me of just like regular Jack. It's almost like too sweet type situation.
Oh.
It's not bad. It's just not my cup of tea.
Is there any specific reason why you picked that one?
The label.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's the label.
Oh, all right. That is a catchy label.
Yeah, right? Right? Yeah. Tell me that label doesn't look cool. Like, I was like, all right, sure. So yeah, we were looking at a Total Wine. And just happened to see that bottle, and I needed an extra bottle of scotch, obviously. My bar would had a spot for it, so I went ahead and got it.
I like how you say extra.
I mean, I was almost out of my 5 bottles of whiskey.
If I'm down to 3, that means I'm out of whiskey.
Exactly. See, now you're catching on. If I could get my wife to catch on, I'd be a happy man.
All right, sir. For this episode, our cigar topic, mm-hmm, we will be talking about vertical integration.
Vertical integration. You don't even get that vertical.
Dude, I got hops.
But when I mean, you 4'5" and you hop off the boxes that make you hop 3 feet.
We play ball together. I don't need to say anymore. Because I've heard vertical integration quite a few times.
Yeah.
In the cigar industry. So I was like, you know what? Let's talk about it. Let's see or educate others to give a better idea of what vertical integration is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then for our leadership topic, we're going to talk about how, you know, you guys got to be aware of the scope of perception.
Ah.
Which is a great leadership topic. Can't wait to get into that one. But first, we got to get into our cigar topic. And of course, vertical integration. So what is vertical integration, Dice?
Well, I'm going to say what I think it is before I read off this paper. Well, not what I think it is, my idea of it behind. Vertical integration is where a whole company starts from, especially specifically cigars, starts from the farming of the seedling all the way up, and they control every aspect of the process until it reaches the actual brick and mortar. Or wherever you get your cigars.
Yeah.
So, and when I say every aspect, I mean every single aspect. Packaging, mailing, shipping, making the boxes, everything.
Yeah. Yeah. That's 100% correct. So when a cigar manufacturer says that they're vertically integrated, this usually means they control the entire process. Farming tobacco to producing the final product, right? Just like you said. It's not usual for a company to have that sort of setup. Usually there's a company that has maybe a factory of rollers, and they buy their tobacco from various growers, and they'll get that tobacco and they'll bring it over, and then they'll roll it, and then they, you know, package it and ship it and everything else. So there's a brand out there that buys the tobacco from somebody else, has another factory roll it for them. They put the packaging on it, and then they ship it out, and you know, let people buy it. So, vertical integration is a way to cut your cost, have control over your costs a lot.
Correct. Just because a company's not vertically integrated doesn't mean that their quality of cigars are any less or any better, because they're outstanding companies out there that's not vertically integrated, and then there's some that's in the process of, and they're just outstanding cigars. But like you said, the cost, if you're vertically integrated, you're able to control the cost more, because you actually have hands on every process that goes through. So if you want to use a different brand or a different, I don't know, box company or something like that, then of course you're going to seek out the lowest bidder or whatever you're trying to find. But if you're vertically integrated, you can control the cost of the box. So you can either select that expensive oak wood, or you can get, I don't know, some cardboard.
Particle board or something.
Yeah, if that's what you choose. But it's all your option, because everything is involving you.
Right, yeah. You don't have to go for the embossed label. You can just go for a straight plain paper label or whatever, you know. There's many different ways to, you know, that you can control those costs. And, you know, as a manufacturer, if you're vertically integrated, then it's up to you to control whatever you want to control.
One of the first steps of the process of being vertically integrated is farming. As you expect, this person who plants the seed and farms the tobacco are farmers. Farmers usually sell their tobacco through a broker after it leaves the curing barn.
Yep.
Now, if you're vertically integrated, that's all you. You take care of that. So if your crop is crap, then you kind of messed yourself up.
Yeah.
But if you're just a farmer that sells it to someone, then you're only as good as your crop that you bring in.
Right, right. Yeah. And there's a lot of people who you know, they just go to the broker or the farmer and they work out a deal and they work with that company. They just don't own it, you know. But usually once that person goes to the broker, that's the person that buys the different tobacco varieties from different regions and undertakes that fermentation process. So after the tobacco has been fermented, it is put into bales to begin the aging process. And sometimes that tobacco is sold at that point on the open market, but other times it's reserved for a particular manufacturer. It just depends on whatever deal they got set up previous.
Right, because I would picture a cigar person or a cigar company going out to a specific farm and it's like, field A is all mine. All of field A is mine. Here's the money I will pay for all of field A. As opposed to, I own all the tobacco, I own the farming. So if you want field A, it's not for sale because it belongs to me. I'm vertically integrated, so it's going to stay in my hands.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm sure the manufacturers, you know, they're like, hey, I want so much of your shade, so much of your Lajero, so much of your, whatever type of tobacco that they got. Hey, if you got Corojo in there or Criollo in there, stuff like that, they're gonna take, hey, I want this many bushels of this many bushels of that, this many bushels of this, blah 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 blah, and they're gonna work out the deal for whatever price that is.
Yeah, because the manufacturer, whoever it's going to be, and if you're not vertically integrated, it's going to, of course, buy the tobacco from the broker who gets it from the farm, carry that forward. Then that's when the manufacturer is actually doing the actual blending process.
Right.
Of course, again, it falls back to the vertical integration, to where I don't need to rely on anyone else to do it because I have my own in-house master blender that's going to manufacture or say how we're going to blend a certain tobacco in-house. Everything's already under my roof.
Right, yeah. A manufacturer is, you know, it's just another word for like owning the factory. They own the rollers. They own... even these people who own the factory, if they're rolling for somebody else, that person, whoever they're rolling for, still gets a say in the, since they're putting their band on it, they get a say in the blender and the blend and everything else. You just roll it their way. And that's just, you know, hey, if you're making it for me, this is what I want. I just need your labor, basically, at that point.
Correct.
But the brand owner is usually the person or team of people who are the, you know, quote unquote face of the brand, you know, as it's marketed. You got Rocky Patel for Rocky Patel.
Yeah.
there's a bunch of other guys that, Perdomo, Nick Perdomo and, Padron and there's E.P. Creos daughter Lisette Creo. I had to think of her name. It always escapes me. But you know, these are the face of the brand, right? They help market it to consumers. They usually employ a blender, but they may not own their factory outright, so they have to have their cigars produced at a different factory.
Right, and all the way up until this point, I mean, you can, if you and I wanted to get in the cigar game and have our own cigar, Leadership of the Leaf cigar, we can actually go out right now and buy bundles of actual already made cigars to where we had no part of the process at all, other than we purchased some blank sticks without labels on it.
Right, and then we put our label on it and sell it to you at an upcharge.
Yeah, and then we become a brand owner at that time.
Yeah.
There's some companies out there that do that. There's also some companies out there that lease their name or give rights to their name to some of the smaller cigar companies. A quick buck.
Yeah. And ultimately, I don't care if people are vertically integrated or not. What I'm more concerned with is the final product of the company rather than its vertical integration. To that end, I would say, are you in your first third yet?
Yeah. Yes, sir. I am definitely.
That was
in
a
my
great
first
segue.
I didn't want to take it away. I just was going to roll with it because it was amazing.
I just had to, I had to point it out. It's so good.
Right on point, sir. And because I'm smoking a different size than you, our flavor profiles might be different, even though they're the same cigar. But I'm definitely leather, coffee, and some spice.
So I don't get the spice.
Okay.
I get leather, a little bit of coffee. I almost get like a figgy sweetness. Yeah, it's just leather and coffee. I don't really get a whole lot of spice.
Okay, we didn't really talk about the cold draw. Davidoff's, because I smoked a little more Davidoff's than you.
This is my first one.
Not bragging. But Davidoff's, a lot of times on that cold draw, has like a very hay, musty, like, yeah, barnyard to it.
I got that.
Okay, good. Maybe you're not getting the spice because you already passed it, or I'm not sure. Maybe there's not spice in yours. I know I'm definitely getting a back end of spice on mine.
I will say I'm having some draw issues. It's a tight draw.
Really?
It's a very tight draw.
How'd you cut it?
So I did a deep V. I was having draw problems. So I went with it. So then I crown cut it. To see if that would help it. It did not. So I actually had to use the cigar poker to see if that helps it. It did a little bit. So I'm hoping if I just keep smoking it a little bit, it'll loosen up.
Okay. For our listeners, what is a crown cut?
So crown cut is, I took a V cut and I did my normal, you know, up and down V cut. And then I took the same V cutter and I just turned it 90 degrees to where it's left and right. So that way it looks kind of like a crown or an X or a cross cut, you know, however you want to kind of look at it. Okay. Sometimes it opens up a little bit of extra tobacco airflow. So if you're having draw problems, that can help sometimes. It didn't help on this one though. So that must mean that my cigars probably got a little bit of a knot, a little bit lower down. I do know my cigar is properly humidified. Checked it. It's sitting right at about 67%, 66%, somewhere in there, which is right where I want it.
All right. Well, I used a center punch on mine. I took a hole right out the middle. And as of right now, I have no draw issues. And it's... I love... the Late Hour is one of my favorite cigars. The color of it, the shape of it, the color is like a very, very dark brown, almost like a chocolate bar. Label catches my eye with the black and the gold.
Yeah, it's a very classy looking label.
Yeah, so this is one of my, when I'm feeling fancy and want to spend a little change, this is what I would buy.
Yeah.
So if you had an option,
options. I love options.
Would you spend the money to make your company integrated to where you would be almost a boutique to start off with because of money issues? Of course, it's going to take a lot more money to be a boutique. Or would you go straight to the manufacturing spot, or would you just go ahead and buy a finished product?
If it was me, and I was starting off, like right now, like I didn't do anything else. I just was like, hey, wake up tomorrow, I'm going to go start a cigar brand.
That's true. Yes.
Okay. I'm going to buy the finished product right now.
Oh, yeah? You get your name out there?
Yes, that one. Two, because before I buy the finished product, I have to taste test it, right?
Right.
So then I'm going to have to taste test these cigars, and it helps me to know if my palate is something that would, I could put, you know, one, I could discern. Two, is it a palate that other people enjoy, right? Like Steve Saka, I only blend for, you know, he blends for himself. There's a bunch of other blenders out there that are like, oh, I don't really blend for anybody else but myself. And you know, my, you know, my palate, stuff like that. So I want to know, is my palate going to be something like, if I had to, if I was to put it out there and be a boutique cigar, get my name out there, get people to try it, go to these trade shows, right? Is it going to be good enough to actually be able for somebody to be like, and try this and actually get traction? If I gained traction off of, you know, putting out a couple pre-production cigars, then I'm going to start working with, during that time, I'm going to start working with blenders to learn how to blend and see if I can't develop my palate a little bit more. I'm going to go backwards. I'm going to work my way, you know, production, then the manufacturer, then I'll worry about the tobacco.
I will agree with you. I will almost try to turn the wheels of time backwards as well. But my problem with going straight to the finished product is it's already a finished product. I think I will actually jump in the manufacturing spot.
Well, see, my thing is, like, from just my first cigar, like the first one I put out, I'll put out, you know, because I don't want to. The thing is and here's what I don't know, right? How much money would it cost me to buy pre-done cigars versus the manufacturing process? You know, I'm thinking if these are some pre-production cigars and I have several thousand of them, right? And right. I can put them out. I don't lose as much money versus let me go to the manufacturing process and pay somebody to roll my cigars. Now I have to buy the tobacco for it to get rolled, then to put the label on it, and then to put it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. I was just thinking back to the Sticks and Stones with Wanda Hernandez interview and how much passion she had in the process. Oh, yeah. So I know she. I don't think she was into farming, but I believe she was a major part of the manufacturing process of it. Listening to her talk about how the cigar was made and the different blends that she was talking about. So I was just curious to where you would stand.
If I could find a pre-production that I like that's already produced, that I'm like, ooh, this is really good, and why isn't this out right now? I'm gonna put this out under my name. Boom. If I can't find that thing, then I'm gonna go to the manufacturing process.
Backtrack a little bit more. I can see that. I can understand that. All right. Do you know any of the companies that are vertically integrated?
I do know that LFD is vertically integrated. I think Fuente is, like, some of the older ones, right? AJ Fernandez, yes. I'm pretty sure. You know, LFD, my father, Perdomo, Padron. I was actually surprised Aganorsa Leaf is vertically integrated.
Yeah, I was a little surprised with that. I do know the being at the trade shows and stuff that there's other companies that use Arganosa's. They use their leaf, but Arganosa leaf itself is their own cigar, and they're vertically integrated. But you can see where they have vertically integrated, but they still, other companies still come to them to make cigars for their company. So,
well, yeah, like, I mean, J.C. Newman makes cigars for a couple other people. I know that. AJ Fernandez makes cigars for other people.
He blends a lot of cigars for other people.
Yeah. You know, some of these older companies, Davidoff, Avo, and Camacho, right?
Dang. That's what I was waiting for, that Davidoff.
Yeah, they're all vertically integrated.
Oh, it's weird. Like, it's almost like this cigar was planned for this actual topic.
Wait, we had planning behind our show? That's not a thing, guys. Let's be honest, right? Can we be honest here? We didn't plan shit.
There's also to smoke this cigar for this episode. And you probably know why. I want to smoke this cigar and drink this special drink for this episode because Father's Day is right there.
Right around the corner.
I wanted to have a great sit-down drink with my buddy for Father's Day. We're both fathers. And enjoy a fancy cigar with a fancy drink. Not fail me, sir.
I never fail you. I have yet to fail you.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, I think
I'll leave it there.
Yeah, I think some of these companies, you know, they're just better at doing the marketing and selling and maybe some blending than they are worrying about growing. Whereas some people are better at growing than they are at marketing and blending their shit.
Well, yeah, I mean, I look at Fuente. They have Opus X, and they have all the fancy thrills. That if you look at their box and their bands, then it tells a story. Right. But then you go to another high end like Davidoff, and you look at the band. Of course, this band is a little more fancier than their normal bands because it has a picture of when. Yeah, it's just a boring C. It's almost like it's a store brand product, like black and white words that says cigar on the label, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of how it feels, but it's more of a, if you want to say, more of a, I don't want to say boutique, but it's a very simple, modern, like label, like mm-hmm. a Movado watch. It's just a watch face with that one silver medallion or whatever you want to call it. That's 12 o'clock.
I still wear the shit out of a Movado watch. You send me one.
Right. So, but then again, you still got the Opus X or the Rolex, and you look at it and you're like, oh shit, look at that. All the fancy whatever doodads on the watch face. Well, so Davidoff is doing something right.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you look at LFD, right? Or, you know, their bands aren't that fancy.
Yeah, La Flora Dominicana.
Yeah, they're not that fancy. It's usually some words, and you know, I think I had an LFD Volcana not too long ago, and it was good cigars. It wasn't a fancy band, like it wasn't something like a Perdomo, right? The Perdomo band is like intricate as all get out, shiny, orange, gold. It pops.
Yeah, gold wrapper.
Yeah, like bam, there I am, Perdomo.
Cello. That's what I was looking for. Cello, gold cello.
Yeah, like everything is there, right? You know, but
yeah,
you know, you look at something like that versus, you know, an LFD. You're like, looks kind of bland. It's not, but it's great, you know, stuff like that.
Well, I look at what CAO, that's not on this list of vertically integrated, but CAO, we smoked some pretty damn good cigars by CAO.
I love CAO, yeah. They're, you know, owned by United, which I think is now owned by STG.
Is it? You think so?
I think. Could be.
Either way, it's still big. I don't like the Scandinavian Tobacco Company.
Yes.
It kind of takes away the face of cigars, but that's fine. I don't see someone like Padron selling out. So keeping the face of a cigar is, I think, I would assume a lot of the vertically integrated cigars still have a face to their cigar. It still has a to it.
Yeah.
You actually feel there's a person there. Well, as you can see, there's several companies that are definitely vertically integrated. And even though they're vertically integrated, they still sell to other manufacturers out there and make cigars and produce tobacco and actual full cigars for other companies. But other than that, I don't think it bears any weight on the quality of their cigar.
No. No, I don't think it does either. I think it all comes down to who... who is blending what, and if you like what they have to offer.
Right. Well, leading that, I mean, we talked about vertical. I don't know why I can't say it. Vertical integration. We'll take a small break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about our second, third.
Yes.
And we'll talk about our leadership portion of where you need to be aware of scope.
Yes.
Be aware of scope.
Scope perception. Of perception.
Scope of perception.
Imperial Brands is what it says.
All right. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to Leadership of the Leaf. I'm just letting you know, if you want to see what kind of cigars that myself, Dice,
and Austin,
what we're smoking on each episode, check out our Instagram on Leadership of the Leaf, all one word.
at Leadership of the Leaf. And please leave us a comment, send us a message with whatever questions or what you guys are smoking on. Maybe you guys have some suggestions for us that we'd love to give it a shot.
At Leadership of the Leaf on Instagram.
Hola, mi gente. I'm Wanda Hernandez. I'm CEO of Sticks and Stones Productions, and we are here with Dyson Austin, and you are listening to Leadership of the Leaf.
All right. Welcome back from that break we just had, and I'm all ready to talk about this second third. How about you, sir?
I'm enjoying it.
You're enjoying it. I am curious to if you have been getting cream and chocolate.
Cream and chocolate?
Yeah, I'm just curious.
No.
Nope. Well, sir, I'm getting leather, slight hints of cream, slight hints of chocolates.
Leather, oak, and a little bit of spice.
All right. So you got some spice, yeah?
Yeah, I got a little bit of spice in the back.
That's fine.
I wonder if the reason that we are getting different notes is because of our different sizes, right? Because I got a Robusto. You got more of a Churchill, right?
Yeah, I got a Churchill. Yeah. Yeah, you could be fading towards your final third.
Maybe.
Only reason why I'm saying, because I had a box of these. I smoked these not often, but this is like one of my favorite Davidoffs, the smoke. So the flavors you describe, I know are coming. I've been there. So
yeah.
That's why I was saying what I was saying. Either way, and it also could be a mixture of your alcohol also, because you said yours is peaty and kind of on a not sweet, but sweeter side. But my Hennessy is also light, very light, not very light. My Hennessy is lighter than my normal VSOP that I drink.
Mm.
So that could play a part.
Yeah, very
That's
much
fine.
So.
I mean, however your scope of perception is,
oh,
it's however you deemed it, sir.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. I like it. I like it. So scope of perception. So leaders need to be aware of scope of perception. And usually that's a portion of the reality that we can be aware of when seen by others. So, right, you meet a person, you see them, you hear them. You have that, you get a perception of that person, right? You read about a person, you have that perception of a person, right? You read about electrons orbiting a nucleus, you got a perception of the atoms and the electrons, got it, right?
Yeah, so, you need to pull his pants up.
So, well, you know, whatever, you meet somebody, you have an impression, you have that, you form a perception, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, you form a perception. Somebody could be the nicest person in the world, and when you meet them, they're having a bad day, and they're like, yeah, and they're gruff and rude, and they're short, and you're like, what the fuck was that dude's problem?
Yeah.
Little do you know, like, that's the nicest person on the planet Earth or whatever, you know? It has no idea. So, just, you gotta be aware of that perception.
Right. Which leads us to
story time.
And the story is really like whatever, right? So I'll just go through this. We can talk about it. An ant roams the Central Park. With its strong sense of smell, limited vision, it senses the chemical trail left behind by other ants of the colony. The ant has the perception of dangers and opportunities around. However, the ant cannot perceive that the place it is roaming is part of a huge city built by humans. Even if one could interface with the ant's brain directly, it would not be possible to convey that information to the ant. The ant brain is too small to store and process such a complex concept. Our brain is much bigger than the brain of the ant. That is why we can comprehend New York City. However, the size of our brain is limited too. If we existed in someone else's Central Park, it would be impossible for us to be aware of it. The part of the reality would be out of the scope of our perception.
Yes. So, and to kind of give this, to pull that to a leadership aspect, right? So when you as a leader or you as a follower following a higher leader, right? let's just say the leader says, hey, keep going north, and you're working and you're cutting down trees or whatever, and you're going north, and you're like, hey boss, I can perceive that there's a mountain up there, and we're gonna run smack dab into it if we don't turn. He's like, got it, keep going north. And you're like, hey boss, I'm just saying there's a mountain up there, it's probably got a lot of stuff around it, we're gonna have to turn around or go to a different direction. He's like, got it, keep going north. And you just keep trucking north, right? And little do you know that the boss has a higher view, because he's above the tree line, and he can see there's a tunnel at the bottom of that mountain. So you're sitting there like, hey boss, we have to change our processes. We're gonna run into this mountain. He's like, nope. Keep on doing what we're doing. Now, if that boss would have taken 3 seconds, or you know, just a little bit of time, and said, hey, I understand your concerns. The reason we're gonna continue going north is there's a tunnel through that mountain, and we gotta get to the other side. So it'd actually take us longer if we try to go around like you're suggesting, rather than just going through the tunnel. I have the higher view. I got a bigger picture, sight picture, whatever you want to call it. And that's why we're going to continue going north. That's why I'm not deviating us from our path. So you got to be aware of, as a leader, sometimes your associates bring stuff up to you. Hey, boss, why are we doing it this way? And you go, I don't care, keep going that way. Take that time, educate them. Same thing for you if you're in a middle management type position and you bring something up to your boss. I always brought it when I bring stuff up like that to my boss. I'm like, hey, I may be missing something, but from my perspective, here's what I'm thinking we're missing, and we need to do it this way. And then usually bosses are a little bit more apt to educate me and say, I understand where you come from, but actually, you know, 16 steps down the line of this process, we're actually solving a roadblock by having you guys do this now. You're like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, we talked a little bit before about it. It's almost, let's look at a manufacturing plant or something like that. The bigger boss has the scope of how many widgets we need to produce. A lot of times the floor managers or whatever, the middle management, they don't see that bigger picture of what needs to be produced. And they don't have an idea of why the boss is having them do a certain thing. As you alluded to before, the reason why I'm having you continue this way is because it'll prevent a bottleneck at the other end. The bottleneck at the other end is something you don't see or perceive with your perception, because you're not seeing the bigger picture. Now, it is my fault that I did not give you the clue or idea or notion that the bigger picture can be avoided if we just continue going down the same path. Because the whole bottleneck is what happened in a whole nother department, which you can't see. But because I'm the big boss guy that can see all departments, I know what's coming ahead. I know right. There's a holiday coming. I know I don't want to work the weekend. And if we do it this way, we're not working the weekend. However it sees fit to continue to push those widgets out.
Right, yeah. It could be something as simple like, hey, I don't understand why I'm doing a quality check here when we have another quality check like 16 steps down the line. And then your boss goes, yeah, but you have to understand your one department, and you're quality checking your one department. There's 5 other departments that mother trucker has to quality check all at one time, and he's 2 people deep for 5 other departments.
Did like, you just say mother trucker?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, continue. Sorry. Mother trucker.
You know, they only got 2 people, and you guys, and that's why I'm having each department do their own quality checks, so that way you guys catch a certain amount of bad widgets before it gets to them, so that way their job is not to try to catch all of your bad widgets and send them back 16 steps in line. I'm having this done here so I don't have to create this huge bottleneck later on down the line.
Right, which creates a difference of like mid-level management to floor management to someone that's on a leadership role, that they're seeing the whole process from start to finish, right? So the perception of the intellectual process of transforming sensory stimuli to meaningful information. So depending on where you're stacked on that totem pole, that's how much meaningful information that you will be transferring from your stimuli, because you only can see so far, as where someone in a higher leadership role can see past certain roadblocks, right?
Right.
So it is the process of interpreting something that we see and hear in our mind to use later to judge for future to judge and give a verdict for future situations for as a person or a group. So someone that's been at the floor level, let's say you're new and you just started floor level, you only been there for like 6 months. Of course, you're learning and growing. Hopefully you're learning and growing because your leadership is doing that. You only can see so far into the forest, as whereas your actual higher leader or your boss or whatever, they can see the whole forest through the trees, as you're just now coming up to that. So your perception, you only can see so far.
Right. Yeah. We can only perceive so much, right? We have sound, speech, touch, taste. You know, we got the other senses like time, balance, acceleration, pain, whatever, right? And then we have our social senses, right? Where we can, you know, feel a room, so to speak. How are other people feeling? Empathy, that sort of stuff, right? So yeah. For example, like Janet goes to a restaurant and likes their customer service. So she'll perceive that it's a good place to hang out and is going to recommend it to her friends who may or may not like it. Janet's perception about the restaurant is good, right? It could be that, you know, her friends go there on her recommendation and they get bad. They get a bad waiter who's having a bad day, and the cook was thinking about, you know, taking a smoke break, so they burnt their food, and that, oh man, I don't know why you like that place, but it sucked. That person's perception is that it's now bad.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's been many a times like that, like, oh, you got to try this place, it's amazing, right? And then you go there, or you watch a movie or something, like, this movie was great. Yeah, I don't think it was that good, man.
Yeah, I don't understand what you're so happy about it. I mean, you look at a lot of these cult classics or whatever, and people are like, I don't understand why you like that movie so much.
Yeah, well, when you say cult classic, it made me think of Scarface, and a lot of people are like, Scarface is a dumb movie. And I'm like, shut your mouth.
So, yeah, I mean, say hello to my little friend.
I mean, come on.
But yeah, the process of perceiving things, there's different stages, right? So you go through receiving, selecting, organizing, and interpreting, right? So just like you as a person go through all these stages, realize that your subordinates and your bosses go through these different stages, right? You got to receive, which is obviously you have to get that perception, right? So it's the initial stage. Person collects all the information, receives information through their sensory organs. They start going through their thought processes.
Right, and this is where the growth and development and everything comes into play. As I know, especially for you, and not especially for you, especially for me, and I can only assume you, when you first started building widgets when we worked together, your perception, your receiving, your initial was very minimal. Like, I just need to build widget. That's all I can see right now. But whereas after some years and years and years, you can see that it's more than just building a widget. You're building a widget to add to another widget, to add to another widget. Like, over time, you're like, oh shit, this is what I've been doing the whole time.
Yeah.
So I can see like the limitations of receiving on your initial as going to selecting in your second stage of the process. Here, a person doesn't receive the data randomly, but selectively. A person selects some information out of the coordinates with his interests or needs. The selection of data is dominated by various internal and external factors. So at the beginning, you're like, I'm just building a widget. And then on your second stage, you'll start selecting like, okay, I know what tools I need to build this widget. Yeah. I know what page to turn to in the instruction manual to figure out how to make a souffle. You know, you start selecting more and more instead of taking everything all in at once with all your sensories. You can fine tune it a little more.
Yeah, yeah. And you got the external and the internal factors, right? So the external, you're going to be like, it's intensity, size, contrast, movement, repetition, familiarity, and novelty, how new it is. Your internal factors are going to be, you know, your psychological requirements, your learning background, your experience. Hey, if you're self-acceptance or you have high self-esteem or interest, you can go as far as a locus of control, right? Yeah. You know, you have an internal locus of control. You think that everything is brought about by your hard work or your mistakes, right? If you have an external locus of control, you think everything is just a circumstance of either luck, whether it be good or bad luck, or hey, that guy screwed me over and made me go look at brakes that weren't bad, and then, you know, now I wrecked the car, and stuff like that, or whatever the case happens to be.
That's true. I mean, it all goes into organizing all that thought process that you just you labeled with your internal and external. Is keeping things in order, or say in a synchronized way of organizing, in order to make sense of all the data you receive. It's important to organize them, because we can organize data by grouping them together based on the similarity, proximity, or establishing a figure ground is a basic process of perception. Here we figure what we mean is to keep a main focus and be ground by means of background stimuli, which are not giving attention.
Yeah, so I mean, you got, it's like selecting a conversation in a crowded room, right? You block out all the other conversations that are having, and you focus in on the conversation that you have, right? Or listening to an orchestra or a band, and you're like, man, I really like the way the saxophone sounds. Okay, so you're gonna focus in on the saxophone, tuning out all the other stuff, to, you know, whether that's good or bad is whatever is, you know, neither here nor there. It's just that's what organizing it is. You know, you ground, take away that background stimuli. And then the final stage is that interpretation, right? So usually that final stage is process of interpreting, which means that forming an idea about a particular object depending on the need or interest. Interpretation means that information we have sensed and organized is finally given a meaning and turning it into something that can be categorized, including stereotyping, halo effect, etc., right? If you guys don't know what that is, we all know what stereotypes is. Halo effect. A halo effect is, hey, I have a good perception about dice. So that means anything that dice does, I'm automatically going to assume the good about it. Like, I'm not going to, dice fucked up. Nah, that can't be. Dice is a good guy. Dice does great things. Why would dice do that bad thing? I don't. That's the halo effect, right?
Right.
You want, like, it could be Joe fixed something. And produce the widget, and Dice just walked up at the last second, and I walk up and I'm like, oh man, this is great. And I have a positive halo effect about Dice and a negative one about Joe. I'd be like, Dice, you did a great job on that widget. Joe, why can't you be more like Dice? And I walk off, and then Joe's over there like, what the fuck, man?
Dice, I'll beat your ass.
Yeah, like, that's the halo effect. And it's very important to organizational behavior.
Right, organizational behavior. We need to understand what the role of perception in an organization is. It is very important in establishing different roles of perception, like understanding the task to be performed, understanding associated importance of task allotted, understanding the preferred behavior to complete respective tasks, and clarifying the role of perception. So, meaning that, I mean, all of it kind of comes together to where you want to, I don't want to say hyper focus on exactly the task at hand, but it's a certain level that you're going to get to where it's almost a due process, like driving. Like when you learn how to drive, you're like, I got to focus on stoplights. I got to focus on these other cars on the road. I got to do all this crazy stuff to make sure I don't hit a pole or wreck or anything, right? I got to be able to apply the brakes as needed before something like that happens. But now after years and years and years of learning how to drive, everything I just list, you kind of go ahead and fine tune that. So almost, I guarantee you, there's been points of time where you're like, damn, I don't even really remember driving home.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's days where I'm like, I park and I'm like, oh shit, I just drove to work and I don't remember the drive at all.
Right.
I don't even remember how I got here.
Your brain has already calculated all the perception they needed for that said task at hand. So you're not stressed about it. You're not worried about it. All your perceptions for that driving task is already there. It's already allotted. It's affixed in your brain skull to make that happen, as opposed to someone that's 10 and 2, 10 and 2. You know, so it just shows the natural progression of interpreting everything you need for your scope of perception.
Yeah. So, for example, every member in a group has to be clear regarding the role allotted to them, right? Programmer writes the code, the tester checks it, the marketer markets it, and the seller sells it, right, etc. It goes on and on and on. So one phrase is used that's used, and I know that we've used it. Perception is
reality.
Reality. Perception is reality. So realize that when you're talking to people and they perceive my lot in life is to only produce widget A and there's nothing beyond that, that's all they're thinking about. So when you're sitting there going, guys, don't you understand the importance of what we're doing here? No, they probably don't, unless you have explained it to them or you show it to them. There's been studies done in the military, actually, where they found the highest rate of suicides is not the people that are doing the thing, right? They're not doing the mission, like whether it's the Air Force flying, like let's just use the Air Force, right? So that's not the pilots flying the mission. It's, they don't have the highest highest suicide rate. It's not the people fixing the planes and seeing them fly. They don't have the highest rate. It's not the security it's not the cops and security people. They're watching it fly and they're guarding people. They got a sense of duty. It's actually the people doing finance and personnel stuff. They have the highest suicide rate. Why? Because they don't think that their job matters. Because their perception is, what does it matter? All I'm doing is getting yelled at for because I jacked some person's pay up and it wasn't even me, it was the system. Or what does it matter if I process this paperwork for this Joe Schmo? I don't care. They, you know, that's their reality because that's their perception. Nothing that they do matters. When in reality, you take that ripple effect and you go, hey, if that paperwork doesn't get processed, then the person doesn't get paid. And if that person doesn't get paid, then they don't, you know, they have additional stresses in life. And maybe that person is a maintainer. And so then they have additional stresses in life. So they pay for gas to get to work. And if they don't get to work, then they... then the plane doesn't get fixed. If the plane doesn't get fixed, the pilot doesn't fly the mission. If the mission doesn't fly, then we lose the war, right? It's for the whole, like, for want of a nail type situation. I'm sure you've heard that, right?
Right, yeah.
So it's that same ripple effect.
And that's what it's important for a leader to understand the scope of perception, because if you're a leader and you have an individual that's low on the totem pole or feels like they're low on the totem pole, as such as where their life wouldn't make a difference in the whole big picture or the whole scheme of things or a cog in the process, is that's how that person is interpreting it. It's important for a leader or someone of a higher caliber to show that scope of perception of you have a significance. Even though you're just a grain of sand on the beach, without you, we can't have this beach because we need every single grain of sand on this to make this a beach.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing, you know, and that's getting people out of their departments and seeing other departments makes a difference. When, you know, when the finance people can walk out and see, hey, oh, we're moving, you know, cars or whatever. Okay, cool. Like they walk out and they see the salespeople walking with the cars and then they realize, oh, it is important for me to process this financial payment and stuff like that. Because without that, this person doesn't get a car. And without that car, their life is ruined or their credit's ruined and blah, you know, whatever the case is, you know, stuff like that. It helps to get them out of from behind their cubicle, their desk, whatever. Hey, this is why it's important for you to be here, because this is what's going on. And without you doing your one thing, this fails.
Right. Well, it bring it all the way back to something you said many times, and I agree with. You need to get up from behind your desk. And I mean, I know in simple terms, that just means get up from behind your desk and go see. But if you look at it in a broader scope or a bigger brush stroke of the whole thing, it's getting out from behind your desk so you can see the world for exactly what it's offering. Again, a younger person a junior person in the process isn't going to really see that big scope. He's not going to see there's a tunnel in that mountain. He's just going to see there's a mountain. There's no point in me continuing to do what I'm doing because there's a fucking mountain there. This is all pointless. This is stupid.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes it just takes you, hey, why don't you come up here and look with me? Come up here. Oh, shit. Yeah, I see it. Okay, now I see why we're doing what we're working towards. Okay, that makes sense. I feel energized and I'm recommitted to the organization. Let's go and get to that mountain and get to that tunnel. I'm good with it, boss. Boom. That's all it takes sometimes.
Well, yeah. I'm just thinking of myself when I was a junior or younger coming up. I asked those questions. I wanted to know why. Now, I do understand there's times where I was like, shut up and fucking color, however you want to word it. But there, my boss was like, here's some of the reasons. This is why this is going on. Let's say babies or reason. Like, I didn't even know we.
But yeah, exactly.
It also depends on the person. And I think we mentioned it before, upbringing, livelihood, different factors play how you perceive things, how you interpret it, how you sight, you see, you smell, touch, taste, all those things, receiving, selecting, organizing, all that is playing a part if you was to mix it all into a magic bullet or a blender.
Magic bullet, really?
Well, if you was all to mix it in like a magic bullet or a blender, it depends on how that person is made. How he was raised, how he came up, is how he's going to perceive things differently from you and I.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and we're seeing that a lot, and different generations see that, and I think that's where a lot of the different generational. I'd say that's where the generational gaps come from, right? Is different perceptions, because things, you know, everyone's raised a little bit differently,
right?
So, you know, just be aware of that. You know, if everybody was raised differently. Everybody does not have your exact upbringing or your internal value system. And that's something to be aware of. Not saying that they don't have values. They may just not be exactly aligned with yours. So be aware of that when you're talking to people. Hey, because their perception is their reality.
Correct. And on that note, sir, I'm just curious of your final third.
Ooh, my final third. Let me give it a taste, because I just transitioned into some new flavors.
Oh.
Cream. Coffee. A little bit of spice.
Cream. Okay.
What you got? What you got for me?
So, when you say spice, would you say it's like a black pepper spice?
Yep.
Okay. And did you say wood? Did you say oak? You didn't say oak, did you?
No.
You said oak prior.
Yeah, previously. I had oak earlier.
The cream that I'm getting is more of...
like a malt?
More of a malt, yes. Nailed it, sir.
So, Dice, it's time. It's time.
It's time. All right.
Single, five-pack, box, or not buy again.
This is a biased question for me, because...
I know. I know what your answer is.
Yeah, my answer is box, and it's going to be box. I've already purchased a box of these people. It's going to be... I'm very curious, because it sucks your first one. You had burn issues and all this other stuff.
It's finally the draw has actually finally evened out.
So this is where I'm more curious. What are you? Single, box. You won't hurt my feelings.
No, I know. I do give this some thought, right? So for people listening, the entire time we're talking, I'm evaluating this cigar, and I'm figuring out, is this single five or box worthy? And as of right now, I know that this is a good cigar. The flavors have been excellent. Despite the draw issues, my burn line has been solid.
Amazing.
It's been solid, despite the draw issues. It's finally started opening up. I think I've had to touch this up like once or twice because of tunneling issues, where I think that's where I hit the plug. I would honestly say...
I'm going to just point out before you answer. I'm going to just point out, I have not had any issue.
Nope.
I have been talking.
Yep.
But mine is also a Churchill.
Yep. I would say that I would easily buy a 5-pack of this, if not a box. Knowing the price of these, I don't know that I would ever buy a box. But I wouldn't be upset if a box got gifted to me. So if anybody wants to, then I'll PM you my address. You just send me a box of cigars, or I'll Venmo me the money, and I'll go buy a box of Davidoffs. But as of right now, I think I would lean more towards a 5-pack.
Okay.
But I wouldn't be upset with a box, I think.
I'll tell you this, because I don't see you just going out to buy more of these. When or if, I'm not going to say if, when I buy another box of these, I'll send you like two from that box. That smoke it off air, and then maybe we'll talk about it on a sidebar, how you enjoyed it or did not enjoy it. Had the same problems you had with this one.
All right, I'm down. I'm always down to receive free cigars.
I got you.
I know. It's good. The taste, like I said, is good. Here's my issue. The taste is very good, but for the price, I'd rather buy something else that has just as much good flavors as this does for way cheaper.
All right, I can understand that. I'm gonna understand. This is considered what, a luxury brand, yeah?
Oh yeah, I'd
ultra premium, brand. Ultra premium luxury. Same
yeah,
thing?
Yeah. Let's see. So okay, so a single of this retails for what?
Mine was $35. I think yours would be around $32.
Okay, so $30 a cigar.
Okay, we'll say $30. Yeah.
Right, $30 to $35. Yeah. Okay. Depending on size.
Depending on location also.
Facts. So $30 to $35 for a cigar. I can get two $15 cigars for that price. Easily. And have the same good burn line, same quality, and the same good flavors. It's just hard for me to spend the money on it. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and I can understand why you say that. I 100% understand, because I understand the cigar issues that you've had. But I have not smoked anything as amazing as this cigar, other than maybe a Bellicose, the when they had that special release. This is by far, if I had the money to cigars, this is by far to cigar, 100%. And by far, I haven't enjoyed anything better than this. Off air, I would enjoy it a lot more than on air, because we're talking and I can't puff on it as much as I like. But by far, this is one of my favorites. That's why I say it's biased. This is one of my favorites. There's nothing you can... It has the halo effect of being amazing for me.
I understand it. Like, I'm you know, when I say that, I try to take the draw issues out, right? I try to focus on flavor and consistency of flavor, right. And so far it's been really, really good. I'm just saying, for the price, I can go get another cigar that has similar flavor notes that are maybe not as blended as well, but almost as well, and spend half as much.
I can understand that.
And that's my issue with Davidoff.
Before we sign off.
Yes.
I want to read something. This is from a listener. I'm going to read something, because we get feedback, and I want to share the feedback that we get. I understand you guys are getting comfortable in your stage. By all, you're killing it. Listening in my car and just zoned out and felt like I was smoking with you guys. This is someone that was listening to our podcast and just felt like he was riding with us and smoking.
I love it.
So I was like, okay, that's great. I love to hear feedback. more feedback I hear, the better we're gonna get, the more we're gonna do, and hopefully more guests and stuff we get on the show. So thanks for the feedback.
Yes, yeah, I was excited for the Wanda Hernandez episode. When that aired, it made me ecstatic. I can't wait for her cigar to come out so we can try it on air and give her the feedback like we promised we would. And you know, I wish her all the luck in the world and all the success in the world. She has worked hard for it, I know. But yeah, I think, you know, for any of our listeners, we listen to you guys. If you guys feel like, hey, I wish they would talk more about, I don't know, whatever. I wish they'd talk more about the pairings between cigar and whiskeys or cigar and Hennessy or whatever. Fine, let us know. We'll talk more about it. We don't have a problem with it. We're just, this is us having a conversation and trying to entertain and inform.
That is absolutely correct. And speaking of entertaining and informing, a red cigar on air.
A red cigar.
There you go. Yeah.
I like it. I'm excited for it. I saw it. Thank you for sending it to me.
Always.
I'm excited. Even my wife was like, what is that? I was like, it's a red cigar. And she goes, they make those?
But until then, my name is Dice. Great.
And I'm Austin. And remember, great leaders smoke great cigars.
That's a fact.
Till next time, guys.
Thank you for listening to Leadership of the Leaf. The comments and opinions expressed by the host and guests does not reflect the opinions of those that broadcast this show, nor does it reflect any of our affiliates.